This is Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bektesh. Brian Dunbar is the executive director of the Institute for the Built Environment at Colorado State University. He is speaking tonight as part of the Aspen Skiing Company's Aspen U series. Hi, Brian.
Hi. How are you, Allison?
Good. Thanks so much for joining me.
Sure.
So I want to get into your work, which looks at regenerative design and built environments, but I kind of want to start by de-buzzwording some of those things. What are we talking about when we say built environment?
Yes, well, the built environment is anything that's been human-formed from the natural environment. So our cities, our buildings, our sidewalks, our parks, our roads, those are all considered the built environment.
And there's some tactile examples of places you've worked, like the National Park Service. You go to cities, school districts. What is it that you're providing for your clients?
So what we do is we lead our project teams that are might be working on a building design or a neighborhood or district design. We provide a process for them to follow that allows them to set really great high-performance goals related to the social conditions, the economic conditions, and the environmental conditions.
So at the end, do they get like an actual cheat sheet for going about their next stages of development?
Yeah, we often help projects all the way through the design and construction and maybe even the operations of a neighborhood or a building or a school. And so we do lead them through a process with a framework that our institute at Colorado State has created. And the framework is called LENSES, and it's an acronym. LENSES stands for Living Environments in Natural, Social, and Economic Systems. So there again, we're talking about, you know, how to make a building, a city, a park, how to make them living, fully alive, economically, socially, and environmentally.
A lot of times if you're thinking of a new development, first of all, you're thinking of one building that has literal architectural blueprints. And it sounds like what you do is look at buildings, yes, but even broader neighborhoods, cities, and you think there's a way to develop them to make this human element alive as well, like make people happier and healthier. How does that
right.
come into play?
Yeah, you're right. You know, one of the things I'm going to talk about is the word hope. And I think we need a lot of hope in our world and in our cities and in our schools. And how do we arrive at that? And I have a good friend at the University of Melbourne in Australia who is on the same wavelength that we are at Colorado State, and that is, how can you design for hope? And that's designing a city or designing a building or designing a school or a home. There are ways to inject hope into our future.
Does this mean bright colors, painted happy faces, architects?
It sure could.
Okay.
Yes, and it should. And it's kind of, that's why we believe that there's a process of bringing people together and hearing from all voices before we set off on designing and building something. What would hope mean for that neighborhood or that group of people that are going to use that place? And so we do a lot of brainstorming, and invariably someone will talk about, you know, the colors that are most joyful for them or for the people that would use that place.
Wow. So bringing in sociology and psychology into design.
Exactly. And biology, sociology, we have our director of research for our institute at Colorado State is a professor in sociology. And boy, I'm an architect. I've learned so much from Jenny. She's taught me a lot about human behavior and what makes people really go. And so we're injecting those things into our work.
Is there anything that translates among all of the different projects you've worked on? Is there something that just makes humans happy and healthy?
Well, I think I will go back to the term hope. Like, if we can find common ground and not dwell on the problems, but dwell on solutions or potential. We really like to look at potential. We're working on a project in Australia where the land has been damaged from years of misuse. And we're working with the people in the area to try to help them see a land that all of a sudden would be growing healthy things, a place for good recreation. And so it doesn't take a long time for them to say, yeah, bring that on. We need that.
And so you do have this environmental aspect to your work as well, these practices of maybe not just offsetting some of the environmental damage that development could have, but even providing a benefit through thinking of these projects. Can you explain what you look at to see if you can have a net positive?
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because that really is the shift that we're talking about is, you know, it's important to do less bad. Like, it's important to use less energy and less water and have less waste. But what we're talking about is actually finding benefit, as you suggested. And so putting minds together to say what would provide benefit economically and socially and environmentally to this situation. And, you know, it maybe takes a little bit, but before too long, maybe it's a child that says, well, this is what makes me happy, or this is what I would like to see here. And then people might start rallying around that. So benefit comes in different ways, but the important thing for me is to getting people on that wavelength of how can we actually find potential and create benefit instead of just doing less bad.
And maybe this circles back to our first question about regenerative design.
Yeah.
How many times a day do you have to say that?
That's good. Yeah, regenerative design and development. And so, you know, for years, our institute's been around for 25 years now. And I'd say for the first close to 20 years, our focus was on sustainability. And then we realized that's not enough. It's important, but it's not enough. And so we hit on this concept that some others around the world are talking about, and that is, how could we regenerate? And, you know, a forest has to regenerate once it has a fire. We're hoping that the all of the areas underwater and the seas, all the coral reefs, we're hoping they can regenerate when they're bleached. Your injury to your elbow has to regenerate. So we're talking about the same thing with our cities and our built environment. Can they regenerate?
Is this like futuristic technology where like the architecture itself is built in some way that it can heal itself? Or does it mean like if the more social aspects, if we turn around this neighborhood, that is going to have a net positive decades later?
Yes, it's both. It's probably more of the latter. In other words, we're really thinking about how do we turn this around? Or, you know, if it's a damaged land, how do we repair that damaged land so that people could thrive? And not just people, but other creatures as well could thrive. So that's more of it. I like your question, though, about the self-healing. We got to think more about that for the future, too.
I know a lot of our listeners are very dedicated to public lands, and you've done this practice with some public lands. What does that look like when you're looking through the lenses aspect or through the work you do when it comes to wilderness?
Well, I'll give you a sort of close to home, for instance. If you were in Colorado 5 years ago, you might remember that in mid-September, there was a large, uncharacteristic rainstorm that happened between Estes Park and Loveland, and it caused the Big Thompson River to flood for days.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's difficult for anyone who's living on the banks of the river or anyone trying to negotiate the roads near the river, but it particularly hit a place called the Sylvandale Guest Ranch, that's at the mouth of the Big Thompson River close to Loveland. And they, a 70-year-old dude ranch that had hosted weddings and so many different families and groups over the years, all of a sudden, a number of their old historic buildings were gone, washed away. So they contacted us, that we had known them for a while, and they said, hey, we don't need sustainability right now. We need what you're talking about. We need to regenerate. And so here was an example of how the natural environment and the built environment have to learn to work together to restore and regenerate the Sylvandale Learning Center. And they really have done some great things. They've rebuilt, but they've built in a durable way. They've not only rebuilt their buildings and their site, but they've rebuilt their programs to have a focus on regeneration.
You know, that's a wonderful example, and it makes me think of this longer future and what you're doing. I mean, what do our towns and cities and neighborhoods look like if we continue to build the way we do versus starting to look at this style of designing for regeneration and for beyond sustainability?
You know, that's a good question. And I think what we're talking about with this idea of regeneration and healthy, thriving places, our city of Fort Collins now is part of a international movement called Nature in the City. And what is nature? Well, there's nature's a lot of things. Certainly people around Aspen appreciate nature. But what would nature in the city be, especially larger cities?
Okay.
And can we all have good access to nature? And can nature also include urban gardens for the people? And all of a sudden, it has so many benefits in terms of reducing heat island and providing food and nutrition to humans and other creatures, and affecting the outlook and the economic condition of a place.
Really? So it could help with businesses or jobs?
Definitely. And neighborhoods and thinking about health of a community, both in terms of the nutrition as well as just the health of the social condition. And then that translates to economic wellness as well.
It's all so interesting. Thank you so much, Brian.
Sure.
Brian Dunbar is the executive director of the Institute for the Built Environment at Colorado State University. He's speaking tonight at the Limelight Hotel. Brian, thank you so much for your time.
Sure. Great to talk to you, and I look forward to spreading our message to those in the Aspen area.
I'm Allison Bektesh, Aspen Public Radio News.